Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
My parents, just as wonderful people as they were, they just couldn't protect me, and they weren't as savvy to the ways of the world. So from a very young age, I had to develop this thick skin and deal with adversity. And we all deal with different adversities. I think my advice to your listeners is we're capable of so much more in terms of being able to endure things. So for me, I built adversity through that, and it sort of allowed me to be more of an individual, whereas a Muslim society is very collective. And then coming here, once again, there was a lot of adversity. You had to struggle through and find your way out of that adversity one day at a time. So I think we need to be open to new cultures and new ways of thinking, and be willing to learn from the new cultures. That's what happened to me. It was like, okay, I'm gonna remain open to this new way of thinking or this new culture. And I think transformation starts by being open to learning those new things. And I would say that in my case, you know, that was very important, to be willing to adjust to the culture. A lot of times people just don't adjust, or they'll come from another country to the United States and they'll stay in that same cocoon-like environment, right? I mean, same store, same food, same clothing, and I think they need to bring that diversity and bring that differentness to the surroundings, instead of keeping it to themselves. And for me, I think that was a very important lesson, to bring my whole self to work or to my relationships.
Yeah. How you day? How you day? That was the voice of Ali Master. Now, Ali's story is pretty incredible. This is an immigrant who came from Pakistan, who had an incredible amount of self-exploration that he needed to go through in order to become the person that he became today. And we talk about his journey through immigration, his journey to entrepreneurship, his journey to love and identity. I think it's very relevant in today's time. And it's always cool to see someone who's done it and is now passing it on to his generation of kids. I really hope that you all can find yourself in stories. I really hope that you all can understand the importance of being open-minded and being able to expand your worldviews. Really, really, I want you to take those points in. Make sure you check out his book. His book is pretty incredible. He's very vulnerable in his book, and you're going to see as well in the interview. So enjoy the episode. Check it out. Love you all. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is Ali Master, who is a serial entrepreneur and EY partner. I said intrapreneur, and we're going to discuss what that means. He's an author. He's a speaker. He's a husband. He's a dad. He's an elder. He describes himself as a professional cricketer wannabe and always hopeful Dallas Cowboys fan. I am really sorry. But but what we're going to be talking about is his amazing new book and his background of, you know, of being an immigrant and how he overcame challenges to thrive in order to get the American dream. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tayo. Thanks for hosting me.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Right off the bat, I do identify with you when you call yourself an immigrant, because I've always been an international student and someone on a visa. I've always wondered about the adjusting period. You know, what were those days like when you were in between different cultures and you were trying to figure out how to express yourself in a different land? What was that like?
Very hard and challenging. So this is for your audience's benefit. We're talking about the mid-80s here. So I've been in the States for about 33 years now. And yeah, I grew up in Pakistan, and it was the farthest I'd ever traveled, may have been like India. And that culture is not hugely different from my culture in Karachi, Pakistan. And I came from a family where my dad was working for an affiliate of GE. So we had a lot of comforts. You know, we had like a chauffeur and a gardener and a cook and a maid and a big house. And the company was paying for all that. And to go from that world and come into New York and then to Texas overnight, your whole life changes with a plane flight. And then you're sweeping floors at a McDonald's few short weeks later. It was very different. You were in a culture shock economically. You were in a culture shock just in terms of going from a majority community to suddenly you're diverse and you look different than everybody and your language is different. I knew English, but I didn't know Texan. So it was a big, huge adjustment I had to go through.
I can imagine. And, you know, for many people listening, a lot of times when people come to America, you know, you can either, the three ways to become American is that so you get a job, you get married, or I guess, you have this amazing idea that sponsors you or something. But right. a lot of students do end up coming to America, and it sounds like we're an international student. And that first experience, I can say firsthand, which is always what I've always been, is definitely not what you always expect, because you have a vision of America based on the movies you see on TV or the shows you watch. But when you come to America, you realize that it's so much bigger than what you see. You might see a Hollywood version. You might see a New York. You might see a Chicago, but you wouldn't get into the weeds of what the South is or what the Northeast is and the inner cultures of that. So you said you didn't speak Texan. I picked up on that. Explain how Texas is different from the rest of the United States.
Well, it's funny you would ask that. First of all, you're absolutely right. In some ways, the stereotypes that I had of America and the vision that I had, which was all portrayed and sort of structured for me through TV shows, as you alluded. You had, in those days, you know, I'm aging myself, but you had shows like Dallas and Mary Tyler Moore and Chips and Dynasty and these night soaps. And my first semester, I come to University of Texas and they run out of space in the men's dorm. So the first semester, me and 9 other guys are in the girls' dorm. Okay. Yeah. So that was sort of like the movies. And I was like, hey, this is what it's like. And that's how and it was quite the semester, as you can imagine. Right. And so some ways it was very much like, yeah, this is how it is. But on the other ways, how people treat you, it is different. So, but yeah, Texan, to just tell you a funny story. One of the things you quickly discover is there's a lot of rules in America and there's a structure to things, and you need to have like an ID for everything. You can't do anything without an ID when you get here.
Yeah.
And I had my passport and stuff, but that's different. Everybody expects like a driver's license. So I go into this, and this is in the Beyond the Golden Door of the book. I go to take this driver's license test, and you had to adjust. First of all, you drive on the right side of the road, right? And in most of the Southeast Asia and even Europe, you're driving on the left side of the road. So you had to adjust, first of all, not to just get out of your apartment complex and take an immediate left, which I did a few times and almost got killed. Wow. So you're there, and this big old Texas Ranger shows up with this hat. He literally had the hat just like the movies, and then we get in the car. He's taking my driving exam, and when you've driven in India and Pakistan, this is nothing. I mean, driving in America is so easy. Everybody's in their lanes, and nobody's.
Well, I'm from Nigeria, so it's very late. You know.
But then he takes me through into the reverse part, and I'm reversing back my car. thinking I got this thing. And he goes, that's good. And I'm like, he likes it. And so I keep driving it. And he looks at me funny. And he goes, that's good, son. And I'm like, when is he going to tell me to stop? And then he starts raising his voice because we're like about to go into a main highway, still reversing. And he pulls the handbrake saying, I told you to, that's good. I'm like, I know. I thought you liked it. He goes, no, I meant stop.
Oh, you didn't get that's good. It's okay. Oh, wow.
People do speak different here, you know, and that was an adjustment.
Okay. So speaking of adjustments, you then obviously you settled in, you found a way to build a home there in Texas. What was the transition like from working at McDonald's to becoming managing partner at one of the big six accounting firms?
Yeah. So first of all, I went through a lot of challenges because even in the beginning and because I had never been trained, as I was saying, I had been raised with a silver spoon in my mouth. And my dad, I didn't realize he traded in his pension, his whole life pension, for 1 year's worth of tuition in the University of Texas. So didn't realize that. Yeah, I didn't realize the company was paying for the car and the country club membership and all that. So we weren't as rich as I thought. So then he tells me, and I don't know how Nigerian parents are, but Pakistani parents are super private. They don't tell you their finances, any of that. You just sort of, it's a need to know basis. So I had to go get a job at McDonald's. And in the beginning, I ran into the wrong crowd and missed work and was struggling in college. So I literally, it was a very challenging time for me. And then I made a lot of mistakes. So lost my job, found another job at McDonald's, and I finally met this girl, and her name was Judy, and she was probably the first person I met who was like making good grades and working hard, kind of a clean cut person. And you started to, it was like an about turn in my life. And eventually we got married and she was like, you really need to get a real job. No more polyester pants and no more getting up at 3 a.m. to open the store, close the store. Cause I had worked my way to a manager. And during that time, even at McDonald's, I saw a path forward because in countries like Pakistan, and I think that may be true of Nigeria, you tell me, people that work in restaurants, you know, they don't ever turn out to be a CEO of that company someday. Like at McDonald's, Fred Turner, who was a CEO, started at ground level. So you had a path to go from A to B and right. work to be a manager, right? And then work right. to be a store manager and then own stores. So that was very encouraging to me. But eventually, I loved customer service, so I left McDonald's and I was taking accounting courses at University of Texas and graduating soon as a degree in accounting. And I got a customer service job at a boutique firm in Dallas that really focused on very niche areas of tax. And I sort of got enamored by technology and how you can take a single piece of the tax code and apply technology to it. So I loved it so much. I then went and started my own company, which failed miserably because you're 23 and you're trying to start your own business. So I got into this thing you call that you alluded to earlier called intrapreneurship. How do you start a business inside another business? And I did that for a local CPA firm in Dallas. And I met my first sponsor, which, as you know, is so important in when you talk about inclusion and diversity, to have sponsors. So I had my first sponsor in this guy named Ron, and I worked for him, and that started to become successful. And we had a few Ernst & Young clients. So instead of doing the traditional path where you're doing audit or tax, I was already starting businesses at a young age. And we had a few Ernst & Young clients, and eventually that led to a referral to Ernst & Young. And I got a job at EY, and we're talking now in the 90s. And I tried to convince them that, hey, let me start some new businesses for you. And in those days, I found more sponsors who were willing to take the risk on me. And that led to just great success. So a lot of hard work, but eventually that I made partner 8 years later.
So you had EY as a client before you started working for them?
No, I had some EY clients as my clients. So some of these niche areas of tax that I was focused on, Ernst & Young didn't really do as much in those areas. So every once in a while, they would send us a referral of a client or two. And so I knew them through that. And eventually my mentor or my sponsor, Ron, said, you know, you really need to work for a big four firm. At that time, it was big six. Today, it's only four.
Yeah, big four.
And so that's how it opened the door.
Ah, no, I love this. I love this. So the reason why I love this is we're hearing that you did several things and you picked yourself back up. So I want to dive deeper. You started a business that failed miserably. You started to really understand what entrepreneurship is. You got sponsorship. Someone believed in you. Now, these are all things that many people in my generation, millennial generation, and above or younger rather, are thinking about. You know, how can you bounce back from a failure? And what are things you can work on within yourself to attract mentorship that can lead to sponsorship? How can you be able to look for opportunities? What would you say to, you know, someone that is in that phase in their lives?
Sure. So I would just draw on my own stories and experiences. You know, there was nothing extraordinary about my brilliance or intelligence as much as it was perseverance and putting up with adversity. And I had to stylistically adjust. And that was something I started to learn. So first of all, I had an idea, but I didn't have credibility. So I had good business ideas, but I did not have experience and credibility when I started my own firm. So it failed because I did not have relationships. And I started to realize how crucial relationships are with companies and how important credibility is and how it can transfer from one mentor sponsor to me. And so when I my door closed in my business, but a window opened. And so my advice, first of all, would be, hey, just because your idea didn't work doesn't mean it's a bad idea. You may want to find a different channel or path to take that idea to market. In my case, I just fortunately met this CPA who was very experienced, and he became my sponsor in terms of taking some risks on me. And then I started to work with him, and he would take me to these lunch meetings and go, hey, we're going to go sell. And I'm like, okay. So I'm ready with my technical materials, and we would go to lunch, right? And yeah. And all he would talk about in the first 30 to 40 minutes of this 1 hour lunch is baseball and relationships. And he loved baseball, and he had a lot of clients who would just talk about the Baltimore Orioles or whatever. And I would keep wondering, when is he going to talk about the business stuff? And he would just be patient. And then eventually his client would say, okay, well, what do you want to talk about? And then he would position me going, Ali here has great ideas to save you tax dollars. Ali, go ahead. And then I would do my spiel. And at the end of that lunch, he would be like, okay, send me a contract. And I'd be like, wow, I need to learn about baseball. And what I was learning was it's about getting credibility through others and building relationships and learning about American culture, American sports, American way of doing things. And if you're a person who is an immigrant or someone, you want to learn that. It's about relationships. And then you have to deliver. So now I had these contracts, right? And that's the other important lesson we should talk about is what is the responsibility for protege? I had to deliver, over-deliver, because Ron's credibility was on the line. He had done the introductions for me. And so I would tell your audience, you know, once you find these relationships, it's your job as a protege to over-deliver and make people look good. Because if you don't manage those expectations, then it's hard to get that sponsorship.
Yeah. Wow. And that's really good advice too, because you were talking about credibility. And I think for people that maybe not, or not a citizen of a country, or too young, or whatever, you know, whatever any label someone has ascribed to you, the thing that you always have to work on is how you can stand out, right? So the idea of going above and beyond is something that you shouldn't take for granted. But I love the tenacity aspect, though, the perseverance point that you brought up, because there is no doubt that you're going to fail. And going through your book, there are many failures that I saw. We're talking about flunking out of college, right?
Yes.
Being unemployed. And then something that's really relevant today was, you know, being hospitalized after a failed suicide attempt. Now, we're in a time where depression and mental health, I still don't feel like is being given the attention it needs to be. But we're also seeing a rise in suicides and things like that. What was your experience like in terms of that? And how can, you know, we make sure we take better care of our mental state?
Well, thank you for asking that. And yeah, I think the book talks about probably the lowest point of my life. In my case, I would, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist here, but in my case, it was driven by having a lot of dysfunctional relationships. One in particular, that was a girlfriend that just was very difficult because she was codependent and I'd never dated before, coming from an arranged marriage culture. And so it was my attempt was more sort of call it a act of passion, if you will, to get out of that situation somehow. And thankfully it didn't work. So I think for me, the whole suicide attempt was a more of a act of passion to sort of try to get out of this very difficult relationship that I just didn't, I felt like my back was to the wall. But I think to your
hiring for your small business, if you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Point. Tell you about so in my at my age, of course, I got parents and I have kids, the millennials included, and sometimes, you know, you want to stay close to them because we don't focus enough on some of the things that, you know, people all ages can do, but, you know, especially when relationships can become explosive and people can feel trapped, that can certainly even cause that. So it's not just depression alone. And I think we need to definitely have more focus on those, more education for people and more counseling to figure out, you know, how do you exit difficult situations? Because I had no way of knowing how to get out of that situation.
Oh, then how did you get out of it? Because you said you had no way to get out of it. Something must have happened where.
So. What happened was, so I definitely did end up in the hospital, as the book talks about and as you alluded. And that sort of created space between me and this girlfriend, Lindsay. And then my roommates, I had a couple guys I was living with, and I would beg them, hey, can you please, like, she wanted to go out and do a lot of dancing. I'm like, please take her clubbing. And eventually she met someone, and normally you wouldn't celebrate that, but I celebrated and we broke up, and it was a happy day.
Well, ladies and gentlemen and gender nonconformers, if you're listening, I'm just telling you, a relationship can make or break you sometimes. So that's why self-awareness is so key. You have to really know yourself and know what you can take and what's healthy for you, because if you're not careful, it can lead down several destructive paths, is what I'm hearing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Now, part of your journey as an immigrant is not also, I mean, is not, doesn't always have to do with your job. You know, you have religion and you have love, right? And I've yeah. noticed that you describe yourself as a Pakistani Muslim, but then it sounds like you found Christianity as well, which is interesting. Was that as a result of love or a woman you met, or what? Tell me the story.
So it started out that way. So yeah, when you grow up in a country like Pakistan, it's a predominantly Muslim country, and my whole family was strong Shia Muslim. And you never have any desire or opportunity to explore any alternative truth or to believe something or to not believe something. You're basically told, this is the truth, this is what you believe. And I came into the States, like many internationals from the Muslim countries, with many stereotypes. And then they got validated pretty fast because, you know, I thought, okay, everybody in America is a Christian because, you know, if your name is Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, it's straight out of the Bible. Why wouldn't you be Christian? You know, just like right. if you're born a Muslim, pretty much if you're, you know, so why wouldn't you be born a Christian? So I basically had many misconceptions about Christianity. And then in my early days, like this girlfriend I described, you know, she would go to a Bible study. I'm like, oh, wow, this is how Christians are. And I was wrong about some of my stereotypes. And then eventually I met this girl, Judy, who was actually a practicing Christian. And her talk matched her walk in terms of her integrity and how she handled herself. And so that relationship started to grow, and I got to know her and her family, and they all seemed to be very God-fearing. And so that's when I started to learn more about true Christianity. And then eventually I got a Bible in my hands. And most Muslim countries actually don't speak Arabic, which is what their book is in. And so I'd never read any kind of scripture in English, which was really how I thought and spoke English fluently at that time. So I started to get exposed to Christ through that. And that relationship did form into love, but we broke up because she was so integrous that she was like, hey, I have to move on because we don't, you know, you're a Muslim, I'm a Christian. And so we did break up, and I had to search for the truth on my own and just on my own to determine, okay, who is this person of Christ, and is he the one I should follow? And I'm not saying that was for me, that was what I was faced with. And eventually I decided, yeah, I need to follow him, not realizing any consequences or what that really meant from an implication standpoint. And there were big implications because, you know, growing up in my family in a Muslim country, religion and family and everything goes hand in hand. It's not separated like it is here. So when you're going to choose to follow a different path, you're turning your back on your family and your culture and your faith. And so it was very hard to go back home and tell your parents about it and to tell them that you still love them. And I still love my Muslim family. I love Muslims. But for me, this was the truth that I needed, that I was faced with, that I needed to follow. And that was one of the hardest things I went through. But I did transform from one faith to other.
Wow. Yeah. I don't even know where to start with that. So Nigeria is a largely Christian and Muslim world. So I've always grown up, I grew up as a Christian, but I've always grown up with, you know, Muslim friends. So for me, I didn't have the negative stereotype that people have of Muslims. But
sure.
Yeah. But coming into America, I remember after 9/11, I remember seeing how the attitude changed a little bit, especially for my Muslim friends. But I also am aware, especially being in diversity and inclusion, and I haven't lived in different countries, of how switching religion can really impact your dynamic with family. And you explaining what happened with your job, your personal life, your immigration status and your family. It just sounds like you keep finding new lives to add to yourself, because you're having to go through so many transitions, more than the average person. And yes. And it's across all levels. It's not just financially or, you know, academically, it's also spiritually, and I imagine mentally. And there has to, I just have to pick your brain on this. There has to be something that you've learned from living multiple lifetimes that you can, you know, pass on to the next generation of leaders who is trying to just figure out how to get through one or two days, because, you know, a lot can happen.
Yeah, and I that's a very good question. So I feel, Tayo, that from even a very young age, and the book talks about that, I had sexual abuse I went through. My parents, just as wonderful people as they were, they just couldn't protect me, and they weren't as savvy to the ways of the world. So from a very young age, I had to develop this thick skin and deal with adversity. And we all deal with different adversities. I think my advice to your listeners is we're capable of so much more in terms of being able to endure things. So for me, I built adversity through that, and it sort of allowed me to be more of an individual, whereas a Muslim society is very collective. And then coming here, once again, there was a lot of adversity. You had to struggle through and find your way out of that adversity one day at a time. So I think we need to be open to new cultures and new ways of thinking, and be willing to learn from the new cultures. That's what happened to me. It was like, okay, I'm going to remain open to this new way of thinking or this new culture. And I think transformation starts by being open to learning those new things. And I would say that in my case, you know, that was very important, to be willing to adjust to the culture. A lot of times people just don't adjust, or they'll come from another country to the United States and they'll stay in that same cocoon-like environment, right? I mean, same store, same food, same clothing. And I think they need to bring that diversity and bring that differentness to the surroundings instead of keeping it to themselves. And for me, I think that was a very important lesson, to bring my whole self to work or to my relationships.
Yeah, yeah. I always say people should practice being the minority every on purpose on a weekly basis. I think experiences matter. And the way you and I grew up, we didn't have a choice many times where we were the minority where we were. Even when we went back home, we were hidden immigrants. But
right.
I think the experience that we can both say is that exposed us to different ways of thinking, allowed us to think more big picture, and allow us to see things from different perspectives. And so my argument is, if people actually do that on purpose, where they find places where they are the minority, at least on a weekly basis, that exposes their mindset and opens their mind, the worldview rather.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And same thing if they're building teams, and you're going to have conflict, right? When you're at work, mm-hmm. The tendency would be to just, let's just work with everybody that's just like me.
Yeah.
But then that's not always the best result at the end. But so sometimes there's conflict, but that's a healthy conflict that you just need to be willing to be open to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're getting ready to close here, but I want to give you the chance to talk about what you describe as the invisible hand of capitalism, and mm-hmm. how that and the rule of law can coexist beautifully.
Sure. So what I mean by that is that, you know, in America, I felt like there is this good balance between letting the entrepreneur, you know, let them operate in without too much hindrance. So I guess I'm sort of showing my hand that my view is less regulation and to let business thrive. And in America, I saw that, you know, the invisible hand is a reference to just Adam Smith and The Economist, and letting supply and demand allow it to drive market forces, let them drive business and growth. And in America, I saw there was a lot of opportunity for there that, but there is a beautiful balance between that and the rule of law, because in many other countries that I experienced in my 30-something years here, going back 17 nations I've traveled in, lived in multiple countries, if there isn't that rule of law protecting the little guy, and you come up with an idea and it's just stolen, or there's no justice, or there is justice only for the rich or the elite, then the entrepreneurship gets suffocated. And so I found in America the freedom where there's rule of law that protects against certain discriminatory behavior to a degree. It's not perfect, but at the same time, you have this opportunity for market forces to coexist. And that's not available everywhere else.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that freedom to do that. So, okay. The reason why I brought that up, and I was very, very interested in your opinion, is because we do live in a time rather where people are really, this competing ideas, people are having a hard time finding agreement with these two concepts that you're yes. talking about. And it's becoming pretty much, as the time as election comes about, it's becoming a really big topic of of discussion across generation and across businesses. You seem to think that it is possible. Others seem to think it is not impossible. It's not possible at all. And I'm just wondering, what's the best way to communicate the idea of harmony to the right people so that, you know, people will be able to understand how that could work together?
Yeah, I mean, I've been struggling with this myself. And I think one of the reasons I wrote the book was there was so much divisiveness and so much polarization, right? And
yeah.
I feel that whether you're liberal or conservative or socialist or capitalist, I feel like there is more we have in common as residents and citizens, and the values of this nation that are shared by both perspectives. Those, I feel like we have more in common than not. And I think we need to embrace those core values of viewing individuals as individuals, and having that we've been created with, you know, inalienable rights, and this is a great nation despite its problems. If we focus on some of those core values, I feel we can at least take a step towards each other, right?
And
not always be focused on, I think we're so worried that, oh, if we give in on this or that view, that, you know, we're sort of rejecting our entire platform of perspective. And, you know, we got to find ways to work together somehow. And we still have more in common than not, in my opinion.
No, I share your optimism, and I'm not going to give up until we get there. Your book, which is amazing, is something that's called I love the title. I'm not sure how you got it, but Beyond the Golden Door, right? It's out now. What would you want the audience to gain from the book, and where can they find it?
Well, first of all, I want to answer your question, where does this Beyond the Golden Door come from? So, you know, Beyond the Golden Door actually comes from the quote on the Statue of Liberty, where she's saying, you know, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. And she says, I lift my lamp beside the golden door. So golden door is the entryway to this nation. And it's a message to the immigrants welcoming them. So that's where it came from. And what I want the readers to get out is really they are going to be talking, they're studying my story, but they're really going to appreciate the freedoms that we have. And in my journey, I'm hoping they're going to see themselves and where are they in their own journey. And we just celebrated July 4th not that long ago. And That's wonderful that we celebrate the freedoms at one day. But what about the other 364 days? What can they do to preserve these freedoms that we have? So I want them to sort of, A, recognize how amazing these freedoms are, especially if they're like a second, third generation American, and B, think about what they can do to preserve those freedoms. Not everybody can like join the military, you know, but what can they do? Maybe they can, maybe they have a bias they need to recognize that they have, and sort of unconscious bias, and go, oh, you know, I need to maybe think about that. Maybe give an assignment to somebody who they normally don't give an assignment to because that person's a minority, or maybe they're thinking about joining the fire department to volunteer. Whatever they can do, I want to inspire them to contribute to preserving the freedoms.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I can't think of a better way to end the interview. I'm going to make sure I put all the show notes, the links to the book in the show notes, and we'll make sure we have different ways to contact you. I really, really enjoy the book, and I'm loving everything that you're saying in terms of finding, you know, core values, and also examining yourself so that you understand potential biases that you have. The last question that I ask my guests before we close is my mission statement reframed as a question. My mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. It's the foundation of this podcast and everything that I do. So how do you, Ali, use your difference to make a difference?
Well, I do, first of all, by bringing my differences and not hiding them. And this book has been a bold step to actually really lay it all out and share my difference with the world. And it's been, so far, been an amazing experience, Hayo, where people are embracing that. Because I had some fears and some trepidation. You know, how is my colleague who happens to be from the same country or same faith going to react? But they've been very open. So you make a difference by bringing your differences, your whole self, wherever you are, not pushing them in people's faces, but just bringing them naturally, and also acknowledging that your differences are, other people have differences too, and welcoming their differences.
Well said. Thank you so much, Ali. I really, really appreciate you spending time. Thank you for, taking, the day out of your busy schedule to talk to us, and looking forward to sharing this episode.
Well, thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to reading your book.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. I really appreciate that. And ladies, gentlemen, and gender nonconformers, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.